Orange County commissioners met last night but did not take action on the proposed Research Triangle Logistics Park just south of Hillsboro. The RTLP, as it's known, would be a 160-acre development off Old 86. It is in a designated economic development district, but the plan has drawn fire from nearby residents. Commissioners will vote on the proposal on October 20th. Now they kick that vote forward 2 weeks. In the meantime, though, the developer did agree to make some concessions to address neighbors' concerns about traffic on nearby side streets. The Chapel Hill Carborough City School Board will meet tomorrow night at 6 to discuss the findings of a months-long financial review that found several violations and deviations from official district policies over the last 5 years. 97.9 The Hill's Brighton McConnell has more on that review.
According to the financial review, the CHCCS School Board approved just 5 agenda items in 2019 deemed large-dollar contracts and purchases, with a similar amount seen in 2018. The consultants later estimate the board should be regularly dealing with 25 to 35 agenda items of this type each school year. The discrepancy comes from many payments to companies or partners not having physical contracts, with the review citing at least 18 instances of this. In addition, the review says at least 15 contracted services that exceeded a $90,000 threshold that CHCCS policy states needs the school board's approval did not come with a public vote. The consultants also found examples of contracts failing to have a pre-audit signature by CHCCS financial officers, contracts missing signatures from the board chair, deals that began payments before the date of the school board approval, and partnerships without physical bids or quotes by contractors. The need for a review came after the CHCCS school board acknowledged discrepancies in a deal with Education Elements, a professional development consulting company hired to aid in implementing the district's new strategic plan. Documents and payments revealed CHCCS paid Education Elements nearly $260,000 of a deal shown in draft documents to be worth $767,000 in 2019. A signed contract for that amount was not available, according to district officials. The discovery led to the resignation of former Assistant Superintendent of Business and Finance Jennifer Bennett in February. Dr. Pam Baldwin ended her tenure as superintendent with CHCCS in June. Neither of them are listed in the 27 district employees interviewed for the review. Current school board members are set to share their impressions of the review on Thursday. The board has actually already met this week in closed session as they interview candidates to be Baldwin's replacement in the superintendent role. You can find the full financial review of Chapel Hill Carborough City Schools on chapelborough.com. For 97.9 The Hill, I'm Brighton McConnell.
COVID-19 numbers are ticking back up in North Carolina. 1,028 residents are now in the hospital with the virus. That's the highest we've seen since mid-August. And the percentage of positive tests is slightly up to around 6-7% from day to day. That uptick coincides with North Carolina's move into phase 3. State Health Secretary Dr. Mandy Cohen says that's likely just a coincidence. The timing isn't exact, but it's a reminder that we all need to keep being careful.
Phase 3. We just started Friday evening. We started to see some of those trends at the end of the week and the beginning of this week, which again, from a time cycle of this virus, is too soon to say it's related to phase 3. What we're seeing generally is a rise in cases across the state. There's no one hot spot. There's no thing that I could tell you right now, as opposed to back in August where we said, you know, look, this is really being driven by what we're seeing in viral spread across our university and college settings. So what I would say and remind everyone is that as we move around more, as there's more opportunities, as we've eased restrictions for the virus to move, we have to double down on the efforts related to the 3 W's. We can keep this virus at bay and continue to ease restrictions if we all work together to follow those guidelines of wearing a mask and staying socially distant. And I want to reiterate what the governor said, is that please, you know, make good choices for yourself in terms of wearing a mask and avoiding large gatherings. Just because things have eased restrictions doesn't mean it's going to be right for every person and every family. Make sure you're thinking about your own personal health as you make choices about settings that you're going to want to be in. But I think it comes back to us all doing, the three W's together, can allow us to make sure that those trends stay as stable as possible as we ease restrictions.
State Health Secretary Dr. Mandy Cohen there. The pandemic has been difficult, but there is a general consensus among Americans about the importance of precautions like mask wearing and social distancing. But as 97.9 The Hill's Al Karras reports, there is also a growing partisan divide about the pandemic, too, and that's having an impact on how we act and how the virus is progressing.
Mark Hetherington, a political scientist and distinguished professor at UNC, has been studying public opinion around COVID-19 and the government's response since the pandemic began. Over the past 6 months, Hetherington has been conducting surveys to gauge the political divide between Republicans and Democrats when it comes to politics and public health.
It seems like a potential battle between party and pandemic, and party seems to be winning that battle right now.
Hetherington said what his research has found is that back in April, when the crisis was new and party leaders were all concerned about the spread of COVID-19, the bipartisan divide was less severe.
What our public opinion surveys show is that Republicans and Democrats in the electorate were pretty much alike in their opinions. Democrats were, maybe not surprisingly, a little bit more supportive of things like mask mandates and shutting down businesses that are non-essential and things along those lines. But Republicans were overwhelmingly supportive of those things, too.
Hetherington said what he has seen through his surveys is that as political leaders have changed their approach and orientation towards the virus, Republicans as a whole have become less supportive of these newfound public health and safety measures.
Now we have this yawning difference, 30 and 40 percentage points in support for, you know, some of the types of things that are probably important to controlling the virus.
Within the last week, Hetherington's public opinion study has become especially pertinent as news of President Trump's COVID-19 diagnosis broke. Trump announced early Friday morning that he and the First Lady had tested positive for the coronavirus, whereas he was taken to the Walter Reed Medical Center Friday evening. Nearly 72 hours after he first arrived as a patient, Trump departed Walter Reed Monday evening, tweeting that he was feeling great and telling his followers, "Don't be afraid of COVID." Hetherington said because of the stances political leaders, including President Trump, have taken, safety measures like masks have been made into a political symbol.
You know, we just saw it, you know, last night when President Trump came home from Walter Reed. And, you know, the first thing he does when he gets on the balcony is he pulls off his mask. I mean, it was a really interesting manifestation of that politicization of mask wearing.
Hetherington and his team are still in the process of publishing the third wave of their research, which was completed just before Trump's diagnosis became public. Although, preliminary results show that the share of Republicans who are somewhat or very concerned about COVID-19 fell from 63% in March to 48% in September. Meanwhile, Republican support for stay-at-home orders and business closures fell even more dramatically during that period.
It would be one thing if people who decided not to wear masks were only endangering themselves. But that's not it. You know, and what the situation at the White House and the Rose Garden ceremony, which seems to have turned into a super spreader event, points up is that you're not just responsible for your own health, you're responsible for the health of all of the people around you.
Hetherington said, as a flood of new information is bombarding the public every day, people are turning to their party-affiliated leaders for information and affirmation in their beliefs. He said this can be dangerous and could ultimately lead to a second wave of COVID if the current administration continues to have a lax portrayal of a serious public health crisis.
Unfortunately, these last 20 or 30 years in American politics have seen Republican leaders consistently undermining and purposefully undermining the faith that people have in expertise, whether it's scientific expertise or whether it's the news media. And, you know, the attitudes that you describe about people being distrustful of, you know, all of these different institutions, it's much more prevalent among conservatives than it is among liberals.
For more information on Hetherington's research on public opinion, party affiliation, and COVID-19, visit chapelboro.com. For 97.9 The Hill, I'm Al Karras.
The pandemic has forced a lot of closures and cancellations, including this year's North Carolina State Fair. But if you want that fried food, the NNO reports you're in luck. The state fairgrounds will be open from October 15th through the 25th, with some vendors serving state fair food to go. Other state-level news, Governor Roy Cooper has appointed two Republicans to the State Board of Elections, Attorney Carr McLam and former lawmaker Tommy Tucker. They're replacing two other GOP board members who abruptly resigned amid pushback from fellow Republicans over voting to support changes to absentee ballot procedures. The legal battle over those changes is still ongoing, by the way. Federal District Judge William Austin held a court hearing on the matter today. Meanwhile, details still emerging after Democratic Senate candidate Cal Cunningham admitted over the weekend to sending sexual texts to a woman who was not his wife. The AP now reports it was an affair between Cunningham and Arlene Todd. Cunningham is a lieutenant colonel in the Army Reserve. WRAL reports the Army Reserve says they're investigating, though it's not clear what they're investigating. It's also not clear, though, if the news is having any impact on the actual election. Republican Senator Tom Tillis is trying to take advantage of the news in his campaign, but a survey this week from Public Policy Polling found Cunningham leading Tillis by 6 points, still virtually unchanged from July. Time now for sports, brought to this hour by All About Insurance. COVID-19 is forcing two UNC teams to make last-minute schedule changes this week. Carolina volleyball and women's soccer were both set to play Virginia, but UVA is dealing with the COVID outbreak and had to cancel both games. UNC volleyball was able to schedule a different opponent. They will instead host Duke on Friday and Sunday in Carmichael Arena. Should be a good couple of matches there. The Tar Heel women's soccer team was set to play Virginia on Thursday. They just won't have that game at all. That got canceled. Carolina women's soccer is number one in the nation in this week's United Soccer Coaches poll. Their next game is now next Thursday, the 15th, against Syracuse. Meanwhile, UNC basketball has its opponent for the first round of this year's Maui Invitational. The Tar Heels will face UNLV on Monday, November 30th at 7 p.m. Due to the pandemic, this year's Maui Invitational is being held in Asheville.